brother. My brother just has this expression where he just kind of gives me the slow nod, which is, he's gone. You know, my father was dead. And I went in and I saw him on a gurney and shit, and it was so strange. And I go outside, and I was a smoker, like cigarette smoker in those days. I was go to have a cigarette, and Donald comes out. And I was like, oh, this is a shock and whatever. You know, we were upset and stuff. And I said, how was it? Because he was there. I said, what happened? And Donald tells me the story of, like, Dad woke up and had this, like, big reaction, like, just like, I'm hot. And he's throwing the sheets off, and Mom freaked out. She's like, what's the matter? She told Donald, call the ambulance, call the hospital. And he was gone within seconds. So that's, you know, bad enough. You know, he was hot and uncomfortable. You don't want to hear, like, oh, he died in his sleep, and we woke up, and he just didn't. But then my brother says this thing probably defined my life. My brother goes, he died screaming. And I go, what? And he goes, he died screaming. And I was like, is that a figure of speech? And he goes, no, he died screaming. And you could see my brother was haunted by it. And my father wasn't like, I wouldn't say he was a butch man or strong man, but he wasn't a soft man by any stretch of the imagination. And I never heard him get real loud or anything like that. And the notion of my father dying screaming changed my life, because I was like, even a good man in this world, you play the game, you play it straight, you play it by the rules, you do everything you're supposed to, you're going to die screaming. And at that point, I was like, there's no point in not trying to accomplish every stupid fucking dream I've got. Even if it's dumb shit, like fucking, you know, oh my God, I've always wanted to collect this many fucking Wayne Gretzky cards in one fucking binder. Or if it's like, I want to make a movie. Or if it's like, I want to put on a podcast. Or I want to do a TV show now. Or I want to write a book. Chase it all down. Chasing whimsies is what I've been doing for the last few years. Just smoking weed and chasing whimsies. Anytime I'm like, back in the day, I'd have a good idea, something I really wanted to follow through on. And then suddenly you get scared. You start thinking about what some motherfucker's going to say and be like, oh, it's stupid. Why would you fucking do that? And fucking why? A lot of why people in this world. I try to surround myself with the why nots, motherfuckers. So you're like, I want to try this. They're like, why not? Let's go. Let's give it a shot. You got to be game, man. People help you achieve your dreams and shit. So for me, the last few years, I've just been trying to accomplish every dopey dream, the big shit, the little shit. You got to do them all. You can't just do the climb every mountain shit. You know, sometimes lay the bar down, step over it, and be like, ta-da, so you feel accomplished. But chase it all and do it all, because we're all going to die screaming. And you might as well enjoy it here. And when I say chase it all, don't fucking do it at the expense of someone else. Obviously, don't hurt somebody else. But go after your dreams, man. If your dream is to, like, I want to kill 12 children, I'm not talking to you. But go after your dreams if they're not going to hurt anybody.
You seem, now, I wish I knew you before you became famous, because you seem like, if I had a guess, I bet you haven't changed at all.
Yeah, the same person pretty much.
How did you navigate that? That's a very...
My friends, those dudes, like those dudes, yeah, that I was like kidding about, like, they don't want to do the show. And that is, they really don't want to. I mean, not really like Kevin, we don't want to do this. But Walter's just like, oh, man.
So
but
you think they just grounded you so much? You, yeah, never gave in to the tide of
those dudes,
craziness,
you know,
out here?
Got friends. I mean, I've never had butch friends who like fucking punch you and wrestle,
I think,
and
that's
shit.
Called butch.
I mean, it is to a fey dude like me. That's butch dudes. Those are bullies. But like the hard boys, as my mom used to say when I was a kid. Leave those hard boys alone, Kevin. I didn't have the rough house playing around like, let's wrestle and shit like that. What I had was more psychological, more oral, and that sounds dirty, but I don't mean oral. More like the dozens. Motherfuckers keeping you tight. You grow up fat, you got to be fucking sharp, stay on your toes, or else you're a fucking victim every time you walk in a room, because most of the world don't look like you. So you get sharp, you learn how to fucking take yourself out first before anybody else can, steal their thunder. Hey, I'm fucking fat. And then people are like, oh, he knows. You know, and then you've removed their fucking card. You're taking their biggest weapon out of their quiver, the biggest thing they got, and then suddenly you've changed the focus, and hey, he's easy with himself, blah blah blah, and it makes people, you know, just all that shit you pick up over the years, it's what shapes you, it's what makes you who you are. So being able to hang out with people who were quick enough to like shred you, but you had to be able to protect yourself, and you know, it's like hanging out with ninjas all the time, or not ninjas so much as Kato from the old Pink Panther movies, where he just hired him to literally attack him out of nowhere. That's what your friends do. They just like attack you out of fucking nowhere. And so by doing this all the time, it made me sharp, but it also kept me very, very real. So these cats, even when the movies would take off, I was doing this one or this one, they were never like, oh my God, the fucking, we had no idea you were a hidden genius. They remain the same exact individuals.
Did they ever tell you I didn't like that one?
Oh, fuck yes.
Really?
Yes. Oh, yes. In a heartbeat. In a heartbeat. They'll let you know. And they'll let you... Like, I brought them on to Mallrats to come work on the movie and stuff. And they made it... They were in it in a few scenes, but they worked behind the scenes. They quit after about 2 weeks because they're just like, I don't want to do this. I have no interest in this. I mean, and that's cool. Like, I respected that. I was like, that's Brian. That's Walter. Like... That's who they are. Rather than be like, all right, man, we're going to do it. Cause
but what makes you think that without...
It might upset Kev if we don't. They're just like, oh, we don't want to do this, dude. Thine own self kind of thing.
I'm sorry. What makes you think that without them, you wouldn't be you, though? What makes you think that without them, you wouldn't have pulled yourself to the ground?
I wouldn't have had that sense of humor. I think my sense of humor largely came from them, largely came from my friend Brian Johnson, and Walter also kind of shaped it to some degree. I was funny, like, don't get me wrong, and in high school I write sketches for the comedy shows and shit like that, but it was their sensibility married to whatever sensibility I had as one of three kids raised Catholic in Highlands, New Jersey, that clicked, that like kind of made me the version of me, you know, the person that you would want to meet, or the person like that was different. Was like Kev, 18 years old, 17, 18, before he started hanging out with Brian and Walter. Those were the cats that kind of helped me define who I was. And if you look at Clerks, like that movie is, I'm kind of Dante, and my friend Brian Johnson is meant to be Randall, the guy that I most wanted to be. Like, he knew, always knew what to say, was fucking funny in a room and shit like that, really misanthropic and stuff. And so that it kind of all communicated. Without those cats, I know I wouldn't have the jobs I've had because I wouldn't have the sense of humor I have now. And I don't think I'd be, if let's say I got into entertainment somehow, I doubt I'd be as grounded. Knowing those dudes have kept me kind of grounded for years.
That's pretty cool, man. It's good. It's good to have something like that in your life, man. Well, I have
nobody
a
else
similar...
is smoking weed. Why aren't you smoking weed? I thought this was a weed show.
We already got high. You want to get high
again? Let's get higher.
Okay.
We can get higher. Why the
You're
fuck
one of
are
those
we
guys.
Experiencing it higher?
Kevin just gave me a heart attack, and he didn't even realize it.
What way? In what way?
By talking about all that life thing. I almost died Friday night.
When?
I was out in...
And you just told me, and I'm like, when?
I was at a karaoke bar in Burbank, right across the street from the Jay Leno show, like the NBC building
and stuff like that.
Dimples.
I drive past that. Yeah. I've seen that place.
I came out, me and my girlfriend, around 11:30, and we were walking out the front, and we parked, so I'm opening the door for her to get in. Out of nowhere, this big, tall, black guy, about 6'2", wearing a fake gray beard, like a Santa Claus beard, that was like tied on with white strings and a hat, and this big... hobo jacket, shoves a gun in my chest and was like, give me your fucking wallet.
Oh man, you're harshing my buzz.
Yeah, and then never mind.
Keep going.
And
we're
then,
already
and then
my girlfriend
was pretty drunk.
You're scared of my stuff, dog.
I'm not scared. That's scared of your stuff.
My girlfriend was pretty drunk because she has like social anxiety, so she drinks, you know, when she goes out.
Right.
She thought it was a joke. She looked over and thought this was like a character or something.
Right.
And so he's like, give
me your... You're shaking, telling it.
Yeah.
You can tell it's still... Fucking A, that would fuck me up. Keep going.
And so he said, you know, give me your fucking purse, bitch. And she's like looking at him like, what? Like she was drunk and shocked. And I'm like, give him the purse. And so she gave him the purse. And then he goes, get in the car, lay on your fucking stomach. And he's shoving the gun in my back while I'm laying in the car. And I'm thinking like, all right, this is like execution style. Like he's telling me to, you know, get in there. And then suddenly he goes, lay down to my girlfriend. And she lay down on her back because she was just so freaked out.
Right.
And he said, I said, lay on your fucking stomach, bitch. And he's like shoving a gun in her back. And then finally we're just like both laying there. And then he slams the door and then just takes off. And so now, like the other day I was at the grocery store and I saw a black guy that was tall. And now I'm like freaking out. Like if it was a redhead that robbed me,
right,
it would have been the same way.
Thing.
But now I see these guys and I'm like becoming like a racist from the 50s now, where I'm like walking around like, what's he doing on my side of the store?
That's tough,
you know, like,
man. Yeah,
it's crazy.
It's like at this point, you were in that moment, dude.
Yeah.
What was it like?
It was really, when I was laying there, it was like, this is it. And but you think that
you think? What did you think?
You know, I didn't think about anything except my girlfriend the whole time. I'm like, because hearing him yell at her,
yes,
that's just you think that you can just gonna look around, look for a weapon or something like that, but when you're in that big of shock, you're just like,
oh, I wouldn't look.
Defenseless.
I'm so not the butch dude that's, and again, there's that word, I'm so not the dude that's like, where's a weapon, I'm gonna do this, right. My reaction is gonna be like, let me suck your dick, let us go. Mm-hmm. I will suck your dick until you let us go. And he's like, you've got a girlfriend. I'm like, still, yeah, I'll be better than her.
Yeah,
I can really deliver. That's where I go with it. Sure. I would never go defensive or offensive. Yeah,
all these people online, of course, is like, that's what you get for not doing jujitsu. No,
that's not
I'm like,
you.
If I had two guns in my pocket, I still
would have been fucked. That's yeah, I mean, even you. If you had yourself strapped to dynamite, maybe, yeah, then you could be like, look at this, bitch.
Right.
Yeah, people, those you should have people should shut the fuck up. No one knows what that's like until that happens to you. And you should always give someone what they want. Usually they just want to fucking get your money and run away. They don't want to shoot you.
Yeah. Is that the case?
Usually.
You hear it once in a while, though, like old lady, you know, did nothing, still gets shot or something like that. So
that does happen.
If it's
sometimes
a young kid on fucking PCP, it's really a gamble.
Right. And this was in
Burbank.
And what time were you leaving this place?
About midnight. And 3 months before that, or 6 months before that, I was in Fuddruckers in Burbank, and some guy's like stealing this girl's purse and running out the door, and I'm chasing him. I'm like, I'm in Burbank right now. Why, you know? And we talked about the Kmart shooting in one podcast. There was a shooting at a Kmart in Burbank, and the officer that got shot was the one that came to rescue me when the other night. And I was like, "You're the one officer." And he's like, "Yeah, I got shot in the, you know, like the leg and stuff like that." And
so he became like a celebrity guy because he got shot in the leg.
Well, he's That's been shot him. At in Burbank, and Kmart's like, you know, in
so
Burbank.
So you saw him on TV, like they showed his picture.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. But it's like it seems like you always hear Burbank is so safe and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, like you don't think of Burbank is like Bob Hope lived there. How could it be? All right, there could be no terror. Well, Tulu Lake.
I wonder how many chicks want to bone that guy because he's the celebrity cop that got shot.
Well, I had to
bet a bunch, right?
Got to be right.
Fuck yeah,
there are chicks that want to fuck fat dudes. Duty. There got to be chicks that want to fuck fucking a hero cop.
Cop that got shot in the leg. I bet that guy is beaten off the pussy.
I was waiting for forensics. Like I had to wait like 4 hours because I mean this is like. They closed off helicopters and everything. There was like cops and stuff. And then they wanted to fingerprint my car. So I'm just sitting there. And he's like going, asking my girlfriend like questions, like weird questions. Like, so what do you do? Oh, you're a dancer, huh? Yeah, well, you're like, and stuff like, it was
cop
weird.
Is asking
like,
cop?
No, he was totally an awesome, nice cop. But it was kind of weird, like hearing like my girlfriend having the talk, like, I'm an exotic dancer. No, but just asking weird questions. And
like
then,
what?
And then,
was he going as close to hitting on her as he could and still remaining a cop?
Was he doing like, why are you with this guy?
Yeah.
You should be protected
with
somebody else.
I don't know. You see me and then you see my girlfriend. Maybe he thought I would like paid for her, like if she was a hooker or something. You know, like how long do you know this guy?
She's out of your league look kind
right,
of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And
Brian fucks way over his head.
But what's weird is I don't even know what's weird. Oh, but it's weird is when he was talking to me and asking me all these questions, and he goes, and I was like, yeah, I would like to be a cop, but I like marijuana too much. And he goes, yeah, I see that. Yeah, you know, marijuana. And he's like, it's going to be legal soon, so don't worry about that.
Cops
you know?
Said that?
Yeah. And I was like, all right, this cop is great.
Yeah, I don't know if he's got a fucking crystal ball.
Yeah.
Come on, man. That was the only silver lining to that horrible story.
Yeah.
Was like at the end of it, the cop was like, don't worry, kid. One day, weed's going to be legal.
And now I'm scared of black wizards.
Wizards
with the beard.
Yeah, like I'm going to be beard. Halloween. There's going to be one black wizard that's going to attack me like a scream mask.
That's going to be an internet meme, my friend. Black wizards.
That created a monster.
Black wizards.
You're scared of monsters, you know, like
that's
werewolves.
That's what I'm smoking.
Stuff.
My strain is.
I'm not scared
wizard.
Of werewolves, bro.
I just
I
have
love
my own
werewolf
monster
movies.
Now,
I'm scared of jaguars and panthers. Did
and
you
now
see the
I
video?
Have a monster.
Did you see the video I tweeted the other day of a jaguar killing a fucking crocodile? No. Somebody tweeted it to me and I retweeted it. It's a jaguar killing a fucking crocodile.
Right.
How scary are jaguars?
I don't know.
They look
this
at a crocodile
is the
and they're
fourth,
like, let me
fourth
just
reference
fuck.
You've made to a jaguar. You, they do
terrifying.
Scare you.
He likes
terrifying.
Listening to Led Zeppelin and
big cats.
Jaguars.
Big
are
cats
around?
To me. Yeah, well, not here, fortunately. But there are pumas in this neighborhood.
Really?
Oh, yeah, for real. Yeah, whenever you see deer, there's deer in this neighborhood and there's pumas.
All right, so
it's,
there's
it's
two
not,
neighborhoods
it's not,
to stay out of, this one and
yeah,
Burbank.
It's not uncommon. Like, people have spotted them in this community several times.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Like mountain cats
yeah,
and
yeah.
Shit.
I mean, there's a known population of them that live, like, around Topanga Canyon in this area. And they travel really far. Like, one of them, they tracked from South Dakota all the way to Connecticut.
Puma?
It got hit by a car in Connecticut, and they had decided.
Yeah, I saw this.
Yeah,
article.
So they did the DNA test on this fucker, and they found out that it's from South Dakota. So this is from a group of genetics from South Dakota. This thing had walked 1,800 miles.
He was looking for sugar to put in his tea. Mm-hmm. A lump? Oh, three or four.
Or a dog or two. Eating some nice plump dogs along the way. Yeah, they do.
Downing mutts on the way. Little dogs like mine. All right, man, let's change up the topic because you're scaring me. Like now I don't want to go out to my car in this neighborhood, and I don't want to get out of my car.
Just watch the video of the jaguar killing a crocodile because it is fucking amazing. Because you think you look at a crocodile and you look at that as a goddamn dinosaur.
Yeah, it's a dinosaur.
Armor plated, evil lizard. Like, who would fuck with that? And the jaguar just like playful with this fucking crocodile. Like, knows it's gonna kill it.
Mm.
It's just playing with it. Swats at it, paws at it. Just looks for the right moment, gets sideways on it, and then butts it right behind the fucking head. It's crazy. It's like. If they're not scared of crocodiles,
yeah. What hope do we have?
Our fleshy bags of pink, you know, these big black muscular evil-looking cats.
In a world where you've been following up on wildlife attack stories, you've been seeing all the bear stories lately.
Yeah, two bears in Yellowstone this year.
The animal bears?
Two bears, guys have been killed by bears in Yellowstone this year. It's rare.
You read that story online about the kid who got bit by the polar bear.
Yeah.
That was fucking astounding. The dude literally tells a story where him and his troop are on, you know, they're out in the fucking woods or something like that. And there's a kid sleeping next to him in a tent. And this polar bear comes fucking through the tent. The kid woke up to, like, wailing and gnashing of teeth and the fucking thing growling and blood all over its face. And the thing bit him on the head, had his head in its mouth. A polar bear had this kid's head in his mouth, and he said it bit so hard they cracked his fucking skull. And he heard it crack in his head, and what he also heard in his head, louder than life, sensor round style from the 70s, was growling because its fucking mouth was over his ear, dude.
Oh my God.
And he starts punching this fucking beast in the head, punching it in the head real hard and shit. And finally, it lets go enough for him to, like, make a move or something like that. So he survived. His buddy who was right next to him died. And they interviewed the kid, and he's talking about it. He's like, I got a lot of guilt, man. Like, it could have been me. If I'd slept on that side, I'd be dead. But I'm like, dude, you got your head bit by a polar bear. I'm not going to say it's worse, but that's pretty damn
bad. So he got away and it just went after his friend next?
No, his friend was done for. By the time the kid woke up, the polar bear had taken what it wanted, I think, from his friend. It had mauled him instantly. It's at his face, I believe.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, man. Nature, what do you think it is? Do you think it's like they're hungry and the weather condition changes and they're just coming into the neighborhoods now? Because you didn't hear a lot about this back in the day. But a lot of it happening now. A lot of more shark attacks. A lot more bear attacks. Maybe
is that
they're
really
just
true statistically?
Well, I'm asking. I don't know more. Maybe it's just I'm reading more about it.
Well, we have more access to information. I do know that they said with this Yellowstone attack that the last time there had been a death from bears in Yellowstone, it was 86, in the 80s.
Yeah. 86, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a long time, man. I mean, shit. You know, that's a long-ass time. You know, it's for nothing to get killed, and then all of a sudden two people get killed quickly. But those two people could have been sprinkled any time along the way. You're in the wrong place, the wrong time. You zig when you should have zagged. It didn't rain enough, so there's not enough food. And then all of a sudden bears start eating other things. Bears are omnivores. That's the crazy thing about them. They can eat whatever the fuck they want.
So it's like us.
But the terrible thing about bears is because they're not strict carnivores, they don't kill their prey before they eat it.
Mm-hmm.
They just start eating.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to stand for a bit, and I just don't want the camera looking at my dick the whole time. That was the only reason.
We could all stand.
No, I just wanted to stretch. Stand? No, I'm all good.
How long are you going to stand for?
Only until it gets awkward. and then I'll kick back down.
Do your balls ever fall asleep from sitting too much? Like, I think I've been sitting a certain way where it squeezes the blood pressure off of one of my balls, and then it feels like my whole crotch is numb.
That's the inevitable progression to you growing a vagina. What's going to happen is
your balls are going to
melt together and then pop open. Like, you remember that scene in John Carpenter's The Thing where the chest cavity opens up and becomes a big mouth?
Yeah.
That's going to be your new pussy.
Arms off.
That's your new pussy. Right. No, my balls don't fall asleep usually.
Never? Have you never had that happen? It's such a weird feeling.
No, but my...
is it good? Should I try it?
No, it's horrible.
I do the Ari Shaffir sometimes, though. When I'm reading, you know, he has that joke about taking a shit and his legs go numb.
Yeah.
And you get off and fall down to the ground.
Yeah.
I read magazines all the time in the toilet, and you do. If you read magazines, you're essentially you're choking out your leg.
Yeah.
That's why jiu-jitsu works. Jiu-jitsu works because you cut off the blood. And what you're doing when your feet go numb is you're putting all this pressure on yourself, and wait, you're essentially choking out your legs.
And making hemorrhoids.
That's what it is?
Yeah, yeah. When you choke someone out in a jiu-jitsu choke, what you're doing is you're stopping the blood to their brain. You're cutting it off. You're stopping it from happening. You're squeezing it. And that's what you're doing when you're sitting here on the toilet. If you have this hard surface beneath your leg, and then you're on top of your leg, you're basically giving your feet a slow choke.
Oh, my God, dude. All right. I do this all the time.
I do too.
I sit on the toilet for so long that when I get up, I got pins and needles and I can't walk. And I have to lean on the wall. And then, like, sometimes I'll try to man up and get through it. But by the time I hit the bedroom, like, you start laughing because it's so – you're out of control of it because the nerves are all dead. And my wife's just like, how long – when are you going to learn? Like, you go in, you shit, you get out. Like, why are you staying in there till your fucking leg falls asleep? And I was like, because I'm getting shit done. But I guess that's unhealthy.
I read car magazines.
Is that what you do? Yeah. I go on the internet, tweet. Yeah,
it's the only time I read car magazines. I won't let myself go on the internet on the toilet. That's where it gets ridiculous. I'm like, I'm down to the occasional magazine. At least let me finish a Matt Taibbi Rolling Stone article in here on the crapper.
Do you wipe sitting up? Or sitting down.
What the fuck?
You mean stand?
Yeah, standing. Who are you? Up.
I've never done that.
You never stand and wiped up?
Only when I was a kid. And this is weird. Wow. All right. You're getting something out of me I haven't said publicly, maybe ever. When I was a kid, I remember, like, I'd take a shit, and I'm trying to remember what age this stopped, but I'd be like, I'm done. And somebody would get up, you'd stand up, and they'd wipe your ass for you. And I think I did that till I was like 7, which is weird.
It is weird.
Yeah, but it was pretty good. Like, in terms of, like, I didn't really have to figure out how to fucking wipe my own shit until that point.
And then you had to train yourself to do it from sitting down.
But I think it's an ever-perfected or an ever-perfecting art form, like the art of the wipe. It's not, you know, there's no one true measure. And I think it develops as you get older. You learn better technique and stuff. But no, not since then. I've never stand. I'm more of a front wiper, though.
Yeah.
Like, I'll reach, because I got a lot of back fat. Rather than reach around, I'll reach through my, lean forward and reach through my legs. So I'm wiping almost like my man puss.
Right.
But I clear the balls so it doesn't hit my balls or anything like that. Wow.
Fascinating.
The wet wipes have really helped my life ever since. Like, did they just come out of nowhere? Couldn't they have those in the 70s or something?
Will Smith was the first one that called them to my attention. I mean, they had baby wipes forever, but these flushables they didn't have.
Will Smith, asshole cleaning aficionado.
Yeah, big time, man. He talks about it in an interview.
He did.
He literally talked about it in an interview. He was just like, Barry Sonnenfeld on Men in Black turned me on to wet wipes for handy wipes for going. He's like, why would you use toilet paper when you can use this? And he's like, I haven't gotten back since. And so one day I went out and got a pack. I was like, this is fucking amazing. It's like taking a shower.
Do you flush them?
Yeah, but these are flushable, so you can't.
Yeah, they say they're flushable. Let me tell you what happens.
I've used them, though, for 4 years, and I've never had any problems.
You know.
But I had a problem. You were probably about to. I had a septic problem with the
I had a tree growing inside my my pipe.
The fuck for out real. Of here.
Oh, dude, it was the most ridiculous thing. I tweeted it. It's almost impossible to find now. Someone on the internet will find it. But it's literally there was a branch growing. It was huge. This crazy root system and everything that was growing in my toilet. I kept having this clogged up toilet. Didn't matter if I poured Drano on it. Nothing would work. So I had these guys come over. I figured they're just going to snake the toilet. Well, they cut out a fucking tree. Because nature is such a motherfucker that a tiny crack had grown in one of the pipes, and it's a root from one of the nearby trees had forced its way into this and found out that there's all this water in this area, so spread apart the pipe by growing and then grew up the pipe. Whoa. It was incredible. It was just invasion by this plant species living off my poop, and it was all clogged up with those little fucking flushable wipes. Those flushable wipes don't go anywhere, dude.
You know how the flushable wipe comes in like that little treasure chest? And you can just get like refills and throw it in there?
Yeah.
Don't do that for that long, because if you look at like the taint or the button of the thing, you know, sometimes if you get a second wipe, you might have a little poo on your hand and that builds up. If you smell that, it smells like an asshole.
I never use the button thing. I just open it and draw them out, man. And for that very reason, yeah. I don't want to touch poo button ever.
Yeah, what's up with that, right?
Yeah, poo button.
That's a silly move. Did they give you a rubber glove to use that thing with?
That's what they should fucking
Yeah, they should give you a rubber glove. That should be what
I'm into the sincere yeah. wipe, to the deep sincere. I'll take a sincere I'll go wipe. Knuckle deep to
Why
wipe
not?
Clean.
You're cleaning yourself out. There's nothing
exactly.
wrong with that.
You never know if somebody's going to be like, tonight's the night I'm going to eat your ass.
So people are so funny about assholes. You know?
Really, who are these people?
Uncomfortable about it. Don't like you talking about your own. Just like certain things you can talk about. You can talk all day about your, oh, I have psoriasis on my elbow. It's really annoying. It's itchy and scratchy.
Yeah, look at my eczema.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can talk about that.
But you start talking about, man, I just... You guys ever like just massaging your asshole? Do you massage your asshole? Then people are like, what the fuck are you talking about? You know, you could say, dude, when I get home, I massage my neck on the way home. You know, sometimes it gets so stiff. I just give it a solid massage on my own. I feel so much better. Yeah, yeah, me too. I know what you mean. I like to massage my asshole. It feels really good.
You do?
Feels no, I don't. But if someone said that, you know.
But do you?
No.
That'd be awesome.
But it's something about you talking about your asshole and pleasure that makes me terrified.
Does it really?
Yeah, something.
I'll tell you a pain story about the asshole.
Or grossed out, at least.
Because of sitting on the turlet, as you said, for all that time, I got an anal fissure.
Oh, Jesus.
You ever have one of those?
No.
You never want one of these. This, I've never been punched in the face or choked out or anything fucking cool, but this was the most pain I think I've ever felt in my entire life.
Really?
It's that ring, that sphincter, is the fulcrum of your entire body you start to discover. Anything you do reverberates in your asshole. I know, it sounds deep, it's not. Move your finger, you can feel it. Move an arm, you can feel it. And you only really realize it when there's something wrong down there. And an anal fissure is when there's a tear right on the fucking lip of your asshole, somewhere on the ring, or this one extended a little deeper. And I didn't know what it was. It was painful, man. Like, so painful that, like, I asked my wife, like, my wife's never fucking seen me completely naked, let alone my asshole. I literally was like, I'm going to ask you to do that fucking thing I never imagined I'd ask another human being to do. And she's like, what? And I was like, I'm going to lay on the bed. I'm going to fucking crane open my two fucking cheeks. I'm going to need you to look in there and tell me if something looks funky. Now,
oh, no.
I've never even seen my own asshole, but I know for a fact I'm a dude. I've got hair down there, too. Mm. So I'm telling her, I'm like, now, you might have to deal with a little shrubbery down there. There's no manscaping. So if that's the case, you might have to move hair. And she's like, oh, my God, please don't make me do this. I was like, there's no one but you. I was like, I'm sorry. I wouldn't have you do it. I was in pain, dude. I was crying. It's hurt so much. So I lay down, and she's looking at it, and she's like, I don't know. There's just so many rolls. You know, she couldn't get to it. I was like, come on. Do you see any blood? She's like, I think I see some blood. I think I see, like, an inflamed area. And I went to a doctor, and the doctor was like, get up on the table and whatnot. And I never went to a proctologist. And I'm laying on the table, and he opens my cheek. And he doesn't even, he puts a flashlight on the outside of my fucking ring piece. I'm waiting for, like, the Fletch move or Moon, right. Moon River. He takes a look with just the flashlight. He goes, oh, anal fissure. I go, really? Is that what it is? He goes, yeah. I was like, you don't want to go deeper? He's going, I don't need to. And he's going, you don't want me to either. And I said, what do you do about him? He's going, I'm going to give you two creams. One's a topical, one a little more insertion. He's going, basically, what was the figure he said? God, I can't remember. He said, in 8 to 10 weeks, you'll start feeling 50% better. And I looked at him like, what? Are you kidding me? And it may not have been 8 to 10, it may have been 4 to 5. But it was a long period of time, only 50% better. And I was like, dude, I don't like these odds. He's like, that's as best I could do. He's like, that's either that or you can go for surgery, but trust me, you don't want that. He's like, I said, what surgery? He's like, well, basically, we get in there with a needle and sew you up. I'm like, forget it. I'll wait for it to heal. And it was fucking misery.
They
dude.
Get in with a needle and sew you up, and then how long does it take before it
That's
heals?
That's the thing, and then it takes for a while to fucking heal. So their whole thing is like, Ooh. Just keep rubbing this topical on it. Nature will heal itself. Try not to fucking rough around with it. I'm like, I don't want to even go near it.
Rough around with your butthole?
Yeah, I'm like,
did the doctor use those terms?
I said, doc,
try
I like
to rough around with it, son.
I said, like Joe Rogan, I like to massage my asshole. What will this mean for that? But he said, he was like, it's very common. He goes, if you're in a room, 45% of the people in the room are dealing with anal fissure. He's gone. Whoa. Nobody talks about it. I said, why? He's going, because it has everything to do with your asshole. He's going, people, he was saying the exact same thing. He's like, people don't talk about this kind of thing publicly. It'd be much easier because you wouldn't have people waiting as long as they do to come in. He's going, it's common practice. He says, you know how yours happened? And I was like, I don't know. I thought it was going to be like a lot of fucking bathroom activity, man. A lot of fucking glory holes and shit. I said, no, no, I don't know how it happened. And he said, you sit on the toilet a lot, I bet. I said, I do, as a matter of fact. He's going, well, your weight sitting on that toilet. And he's going, I bet you don't just go and leave. You sit there for a while. I said, yeah. He's going, it's just, think about it. Gravity is just pulling at that, you know, as you sit there. It's not like you're sitting on the toilet and your butt cheeks are clenched and your asshole is fucking tight. Or
that's
retracted.
What I said.
Is that how you do all tight tension? Like, nothing's getting in here.
With excellent posture.
Your shit comes out through your balls.
My shit comes out when I tell it to.
Oh, look out for it, dude. You never want that.
Oh, my God. That sounds horrible. So it,
I remember
so
smoking
6 weeks,
weed,
only 50%.
6 weeks, 50%.
How, when did it take until it was 100%?
Oh, honestly, it felt like months. I think it was months. Like, wow. And for months, all I could do literally was like lay on the bed, belly down. And if I took a, oddly enough, when I took a shit, it felt better. But it only felt better for the moment I was taking the shit. Because then I guess what, I don't know. I can't even tell you the science of it. But when I took a shit, I felt better. As soon as I was done taking a shit, that's when the agony kicked in of, like, it reminding you it was there. And you would literally just flinch and squirm on the bed like fucking you were withdrawn or something like that. It was, man, nasty.
Yeah, the last thing you want
get
is
off
asshole
those toilets.
Problems.
Yeah, it's the fulcrum of your body.
I had the internal hemorrhoid for that reason, and they had to do the like, rubber band technique where they tie a rubber band around
inside
your asshole, and they tie it super tight so it gets no blood supply and it falls off. Well, I'm like, is this going to hurt? And he goes, no, it's more of an annoying pain. And I'm like, all right. I go home, and it was like somebody shoving their like fingernail into your asshole from the inside and just sitting there and twisting it and turning it like a fucking nut.
How did you shit passage? Did shit get caught up on
no,
the rubber band? Or
no,
anything?
I don't know.
So
just,
how big is this
normally?
Thing that you could wrap a rubber band around it, man?
It was pretty big. And then
you ever have one? You ever had a hemorrhoid or a grape or whatever?
Yeah, I've had a hemorrhoid before.
They said that I was supposed to go back maybe two or three times. This is a whole process. The first time's probably not going to do it. I wouldn't go back to the second one. So now I live with the little guy. And he's just this little teeny guy now, but once in a while, if he eats, like, if I eat the wrong thing, it blows up. He's like, yo, bitch. Not chew clam style.
You still have it in there, tied just, up?
No, the rubber band dissolved, but it's...
But the internal hemorrhoid still exists?
He's got a clit in the sphincter.
Yeah, so it just returns whenever it wants to?
Whenever I, like, get crazy and eat a bunch of hot peppers or something.
Is that what it is? It's for eating?
It's hot peppers. It's a lot of fucking, like, caffeine. It's a lot of, like... Just,
really?
Like,
I had heard that it's from forcing
stuff.
Your shit out.
That's,
from, like,
I was
pushing
gonna say,
it.
Mine is from pushing. Like, I've got a resident just like yours that's mostly quiet.
He's a nice guy.
Lodger, but periodically... Hey, I'm down here. And it's always from fucking, I'm like on the toilet and I'm fucking pushing. Maybe I'm not ready to go, but I'm like, if I don't go now, I'm not going to be able to go for a couple hours. So
once in a while, he shoots somebody and there's blood everywhere. You know, it's like a crime scene.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. My buddy.
Oh. bloody nose, no big deal. Bloody asshole. Oh. Jesus, for reals.
I want to go to the fights, dude. Remember last time you were coming to fights? We got to do it and roll a camera on me, though.
Okay.
So you could watch me vomit on cue.
For sure. Well, there's going to be a big card on Fox coming up real soon. I think it's November. I don't want to say. I think it's the 14th. I have to look at the schedule. But it's going to be on Fox, and I think they're announcing tomorrow who the fighters are. But that'll be in Anaheim. So
that's fucking close.
So that should
and
be
you
fun.
Do all of them? Are you always the guy?
Yeah.
All right.
I didn't do
this. So you
this,
got the hookup?
Yeah.
I don't have to buy tickets for this shit?
No, we'll hook you up, man. Come on, dog. Make you spend your money.
Kevin fucking Smith.
You're Kevin Smith.
I'm happy to spend. Dana White would be make sure. Dudes are getting punched in that ring. I want to make sure they get paid. I'm happy to pay.
Oh, they get paid a motherfucker now.
But they
especially.
Must get paid a little bit of our gate, right? That's how they make it.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's different. I mean, they get different deals. But, you know, the gates, it's almost always sold out. Almost all the domestic UFC sell out. We've had a few problems in other countries where they really weren't, like, hip on the UFC. You know, Germany wasn't like the biggest success when we were over there.
Why they were but just, we don't like this. Stop hitting each other.
Didn't it wasn't like Australia. Australia sells out in like an hour. Whenever we put on a show in Australia, people go fucking nuts. But Germany was a little more difficult.
What about
couldn't
Canada?
Get on, they blocked us from television or something in Germany too. There was something crazy where you could only get it on pay-per-view. They couldn't have it on live television in Germany.
What about Canada? Canada.
Canada's great. Canada's
so Canada, great. I always find, is very similar to Australia or vice versa.
Yeah. Canada's awesome. Yeah. I fucking love Canada. I would live plus. There if it wasn't so confusing. You know, if I didn't have to pay taxes to two different countries.
GST and PST. Yeah.
I think Vancouver's the one of the greatest cities in the world.
Government and the province. Yeah. So it's, you know, you're paying, it's essentially federal and state taxes.
Yeah, but then you also have to pay for American, too, unless you want to. If you want to live in another country, unless you want to give up your citizenship, you have to pay American taxes.
Yeah,
as
you
well.
Would have to. Oh, if you're talking about doing dual citizen.
Yeah, I'm not saying I hate America. Just like I would live in Vancouver. Vancouver is the shit.
Toronto.
It's one of the greatest fucking cities ever.
I'd go for Toronto Hockey Hall of Fame.
I love Toronto, Vancouver. But it gets cold as a motherfucker.
I don't mind weather. I grew up on the East Coast.
I grew up in Boston. And I'm scared.
Yeah, so you know weather.
I'm scared.
So you don't want to go back to it. Edmonton. I would live in Edmonton too. But my old lady would never let me live in Canada, man.
You guys don't like Vancouver?
Well, I like Vancouver. I went to school there. I shot a TV show there and a movie there. Like, I do, but it's not. I'm not into whale art.
All right.
There's a lot of that up there, man. Well, that and trees. Fuck trees.
As a comic, I travel too much, man. With stand-up and with the UFC, I travel too much to risk being snowed in. Mm. So if I live somewhere like Toronto, I would always risk being stuck. You know, good Boston, point. You risk being stuck. It's not a sensible place to live if you're a traveler. Mm. Unless, of course, you know, you can, you know, figure out how to get out of town before the snow hits and, you know,
call Scatman Crothers, man. He shows up in the snow cat and shit.
That snow cat up that mountain.
Totally, man. Just look out for the dude behind the fucking, ah, with the axe.
I do think that I like
people
better.
Didn't see that coming, did you?
Didn't see that. That Jack Nicholson motherfucker.
Shining. He couldn't shine that at all.
That was a great goddamn movie.
Oh, it's a brilliant
movie. And Stephen King doesn't like it. You know that?
Yeah. No, so much so that he made sure they made another one.
So
make a worse one. Make a terrible one. This other one was too good. Make a bad one. Yeah, the TV movie one is tough.
I never saw the TV movie one. Or if I did, I don't remember it.
Steven Weber from Wings replaces Jack Nicholson right then and there. I mean, my hat goes off to Steven Weber because that's balls of steel, right. Dude. You know what I'm saying? To be like, all right, I'll give it a shot.
Right.
The dude, but to be fair, is what Heath Ledger did years later.
Sure.
Like he stepped into a role that Jack Nicholson made iconic and stuff. That all being said, hats off to Steven Weber. That movie's a tough sit.
Yeah.
It ain't
Heath
the
Ledger
Shining by
apparently
Kubrick.
Was on so many pills, he didn't even know what fucking, you know, what position he was taking. When Heath Ledger died, he was on so many different pills.
Is that what they said?
Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. His state of mind. I mean, when you hear all the different shit that he was on when he died. That guy, I mean, there's a lot of those don't give a fuck guys that can put in like spectacular performances like that. Like that Heath Ledger Joker was a fucking pretty spectacular performance.
Yeah.
When a dude has something like that inside of him, you know, that's an amazing abundance of energy, and you're not exactly sure how he's controlling that. Not everybody can have that kind of a burst of energy inside of them and put it under control. Some people like literally aren't capable of that kind of a performance.
You think he was? You think?
I think he's probably had a little bit of crazy in him, man.
No,
and
come on.
The little bit of crazy, and then he gets on pills.
Some cats just make pretend real well.
Yeah, for sure. No doubt about it. But with all the pill thing and that,
I don't want to believe that he was like fucking like I got into the headspace of the Joker.
No, I don't even think that. I don't that
you
asshole
think he had
shit.
Pain in his
no,
life?
I just think he's just good. But I'm just thinking that being really brilliant at something like acting and being completely fucking insane are like next door neighbors, man.
Yeah. It's a thin line. I'll agree with that totally.
the ability to lock onto a character so completely and captivating.
Yes.
Like I'm sorry,
and create
but
it real. Make it so real that you're sitting there like. Look, I love that Joker performance. It's spellbinding. But I say dial like one movie back and look at him in the gay cowboy picture.
Mm-hmm.
That the performance he gives in that movie, that dude exists.
Yeah.
Like the Joker performance is big and
right.
It needs to be big.
Right.
And like pray you never meet someone like that in your life. But you would meet the character, I think it was Ennis or Enos he played. The character he played in Brokeback Mountain, that performance is so fucking frighteningly real. That was the first time I was like, this motherfucker's an actor. I thought he was that dude from 10 Things I Hate About You. But he had chops because he made only one other actor, well, two others. Michael Parks did that for me in From Dusk Till Dawn. Like, that's why Red State exists, because I watched the opening 10 minutes of From Dusk Till Dawn back in 95. I was like, this motherfucker's Yoda. Like, I want to spend a month on set with a dude who can drop performance science this fucking brilliant, this laser sharp, this otherworldly. But then the other one, God, who was it? I just had it on my head. What was the other one? I said Parks. Oh, Billy Bob Thornton in A Simple Plan. Did you ever see A Simple Plan? That fucking movie is, what's his name? The guy that did Spider-Man.
What movie was this?
It was a movie with Bill Paxton.
A Simple Plan.
Bill Paxton, Bill, what's it, what did I say his name was? You know, Billy, what's his face?
Billy Ray Cyrus. Or, not Billy. Billy.
I was going in that direction.
The guy who fucked Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, what, Joe.
Billy Bob.
Billy Bob.
Billy Bob Thornton. Billy Bob Thornton, Jesus Christ.
Billy Bob Thornton and who else? Oh, Bridget Fonda's in it. This fucking movie is so good. So well done. It's about dudes who find money in the woods, drug money. And then they're trying to, like, it's a simple plan. We're going to hold it and whack it up together. We're going to wait some time. And then it just gets more and more complicated and fucking horrible things start happening and shit. Excellent movie. Well done. But Billy Bob Thornton gives a performance in this movie where he ceases to be Billy Bob Thornton. And you're just like, that character exists. The man who is in this movie ain't, there's no connection to Billy Bob Thornton.
Right.
Like, it's literally a dude being possessed of someone else or something like that. He changes his look, changes his delivery, everything.
Perfect example. I think that to be that good, there has to be a part of you that's a little bit fucking crazy. And we know Billy Bob Thornton is a little bit fucking crazy.
What about
no
Meryl
doubt
Streep,
about it.
Though? Meryl Streep, do you think she's a little bit
maybe
crazy?
Maybe she just keeps it together better than him.
Or she keeps
maybe
it
just
under
has
the
better composure. Maybe she just got better composure, more self-aware, but that demon inside her beats just as freely as it does in Billy Bob. She just knows how to control it in her social life. But she can blast it out when she's pretending to be some other person. She can just let that fucking demon free. You know? Billy Bob Thornton is crazy as fuck, yes. I think to a certain extent. Yes and no.
Why
I mean, I think it's completely containable.
Yeah.
You know, I think, like, I've seen Daniel Day-Lewis get interviewed, and I think he's... You know, he's a brilliant guy who's clearly, like, doing it as an artist. You know, he's clearly got a good handle on the whole celebrity thing. I mean, the guy, like, he quit movies to be a fucking shoe cobbler. I mean, he's this crazy, deep, interesting, weirdo
that
dude.
That is one of those stories that, like, everybody knows that Daniel Day-Lewis cobbler thing. It
captures
everybody's imagination. Whether he was serious about it or not,
right?
It may have been his most brilliant fucking move, because for the next 10 years... Whenever somebody says Daniel Day-Lewis, somewhere in the next minute they're going to go, you know, he quit to be a cobbler. He studied shoemaking. Like, it captured people's imagination. Like, why would a guy this good at the job go off, quit, and make shoes for? He came back sooner or later. But that shoe thing captures people's imagination. And you think he probably went to it because it wasn't acting. It was the furthest thing from acting, because you're right. You look at a dude who gets into the role like he does, he probably does go to someplace fucking dark, and accrue a bunch of years of doing that one after another. Maybe going to fucking make shoes in Milan feels good, sounds good, simple, doesn't require much, use a different part of your brain, no darkness and fucking cobbling, you know, unless one of those fucking witches show up.
Some of his movies where he does go dark are the darkest characters in the history of cinema. The
Gangs
fucking
of New York?
The Gangs in New York.
Ugh, love it.
Jesus Christ. Bill the Butcher, that's what his name was, right? Mm. Jesus Christ, was that a fucking scary performance.
Isn't the accent great, too?
Yeah, and he seems like he really would cut your fucking head off with a machete. It's real. You're feeling it.
All the way. One of the only conversations I ever had with Martin Scorsese was after screening that movie. I was coming out of the theater, and I hear somebody go, Kevin, and it sounds like Martin Scorsese. I was like, no way Martin Scorsese would be fucking saying Kevin. And I turn around, and Martin Scorsese was saying Kevin. He was talking to me, and I was like,
whoa.
Holy shit, man, how are you?
Did your balls tingle?
I very much. You know what I'm saying? Like, in a way of like the way he called me wasn't quite peer, but it was like he had no reason to know my name. Exactly.
Right.
And he's like, what'd you think? I said, I fucking loved it, man. Like, and I'd stayed through all the credits and shit. I said, oh, my God, I loved you. You got to tell me, how did he arrive at that accent? And he goes, we found cylinders, old cylinders recorded in around, 19, whatever that period the flick was set. He said, we found cylinders, which we just sat there and played. And Daniel took the accent from there, worked on it a little bit and took the accent from there.
Fuck.
And I was like, what did the cylinders sound like? He goes, surprisingly crystal clear. And, like, you could literally hear what a person, like, what that guy sounded like. In that era.
Isn't that amazing?
Daniel
Day-Lewis is probably our best representation of it, because I bet he nailed it.
He must have.
He must have.
We've never heard the cylinders.
I've never seen him not nail something.
No.
He played a boxer, and it's the best version of an actor playing a boxer ever. He really looks like a boxer. Like, as he's moving, he's doing everything correctly. The way he's holding his hands, the way he's responding to being hit, the way he's following through with his punches, with his footwork. He was literally looked like he could be a professional boxer. It takes so much energy and focus to get that good. Like, he didn't just look like an actor that they taught how to box.
Right.
Like, he's a perfect example. And I don't mean to diss him, but Marky Mark, Mark Wahlberg, whatever.
The Fighter.
The Fighter was a great movie. I loved his performance in the movie. But when you watch him boxing, it looks like an actor is boxing.
Right.
Okay.
Really? Because yes. I thought he was like,
he looks like he can box. I bet he can box. I bet he can box. But it doesn't look like... Like, when you watch Daniel Day-Lewis do it, Daniel Day-Lewis is moving like a real professional boxer. And when you're watching the Mark Wahlberg thing, it seems like I'm watching a movie.
Right.
I'm watching a movie where there's boxing in it. There's a difference in the reality.
What about Stallone? Did he convince?
No.
He didn't look like a boxer?
No, he never looked like
Who
a boxer.
Looked,
I mean, he looks like a guy who could kick your ass.
Other than
Don't get
Daniel
me wrong,
Day-Lewis.
But there's a way a professional fighter moves is very specific. You have to, unless you're some Roy Jones Jr. freak of nature athlete who can keep your hands down and do all kinds of crazy shit because nobody can touch you because you're so fast and your timing is so good.
Mm.
But there's only a few of those guys ever. And if you look at a classic boxer, they have very, you know, very simple characteristics. The hands are always up high, the chin's tucked, the shoulders are up. Nobody does that in a movie. In a movie, everybody's, their hands are down, they're throwing wild punches and flexing their muscles, and it's my turn to hit you, and then it's your turn to hit me, and it looks very obvious.
And nobody, they never get into like a 30-second, 40-second hug, embrace, kind of like where they have to get split up.
Well, you can't do it realistically unless you're going to let people hit people. And you don't want to do that, because you're only going to get one shot at it, and people aren't going to like it. No one's going to like... a halfway fight. I mean, it's like, I'm going to let you hit me, and then I'm going to hit you back. We're going to agree that there's a certain amount of times we're going to hit each other, and we're going to hit each other realistically hard.
Right.
You can't do that. You can't do it. You can't fake it.
I
could do it.
You could do it?
Yeah.
You think you can do it realistically?
Real easy.
Let me ask you this.
Just kidding.
Other than Daniel Day-Lewis, who has convincingly fought in a movie that earned your respect where you were like, all right, that looks like it? Other than Daniel Day-Lewis. Because that bar is too fucking high, dude.
Yeah.
You know what
Denzel
I'm saying?
Washington. Denzel right. Washington when he played Reuben
that
Hurricane Carter.
That bar is too fucking high. Can't you give me somebody that's just like...
Nope, you need a guy like that. You need a bad motherfucker.
Who just really overcommit.
Yeah.
And like...
My friend Terry Claiborne trained him for some of that. And he would go down to the Hollywood boxing gym. It was on La Brea. And he said that guy would be out there every fucking morning at 7 o'clock... blaring his music in the parking lot, fired up, and he said he would run up the stairs and he would train like a professional boxer. He said he did everything I asked him to do, did it exactly the way I told him to do it, skipped rope, sit-ups, when he's in there every day. He literally transformed himself into a professional boxer. There's only a few guys who can hit that level, that Daniel Day-Lewis, that Denzel Washington level of commitment. There's only a few guys who can do that.
So Denzel,
those are the only two guys that I've ever seen that look like real fighters.
Daniel Day-Lewis and Denzel Washington fight each other. Who wins?
Daniel Lewis.
Get the fuck out of
here. I would say Denzel.
That's a crazy white boy.
It's got to be Denzel.
No, he'll get tired. He'll gas out. He'll start off strong. Daniel will take the punches.
What do you base this on,
glory? Fucking talking shit, bro.
We're
both talking shit. I just have to guess. If I looked at the boxer that Daniel Day-Lewis was and I looked at the boxer that, you know, Denzel Washington was, I think Denzel Washington looks like a very good athlete, moves very well, but it looks more like Daniel Day-Lewis is a real boxer.
If we base it on their movie rules, then... Daniel Day-Lewis held out long time as John Proctor in The Crucible.
Denzel Washington, one of the best actors ever, right?
Yeah,
wouldn't you
totally.
Say?
Oh God, yeah. And you know what? They gave him when they gave him the Oscar for what was it? You know,
was it Malcolm
King
X?
Kong? No, that's the thing. They should have given him to him.
Oh,
for Malcolm
right,
X.
Right.
That performance. If you ever go watch Malcolm X footage, you know, on YouTube, which you can now. They got tons of it, nothing but free. Fascinating. You look at that and you realize, like, that dude, you want to talk about a Denzel Washington up at six training like a boxer.
Yeah.
He didn't even have YouTube to pull clips from. He became Malcolm X. The mannerisms, the way he holds his hand as he speaks, it's crazy. He should have gotten, I think he got nominated. He should have won that year. He didn't. Then they gave it to him years later for the King Kong ain't got nothing on me.
Yeah, that was the Training Day.
Training Day.
Yeah.
Which
he was really good in it.
That's the thing. He's like, I remember when they first gave him the award, I hadn't seen the movie. I was like, oh, they're making up for fucking overlooking Malcolm X. But then you see his performance in that movie, and what could be a simple programmer or a simple, like, good guy, bad guy, he ticked that role to the next level.
Yeah.
So it may have been overdue payback for a fantastic performance he didn't get enough credit for, but I think he earned that 10.
I agree, 100%.
On training day.
I agree, 100%.
With this performance alone. Yeah.
He legitimately seemed like a corrupt cop.
Yeah.
He becomes it. He's one of those guys, those Russell Crowe guys.
And sociopathic. Like, yeah. You believed he was sociopathic. Yeah. And, like, him giving him the, like, smoking them, he's like, you're smoking the wet.
Yeah.
And, like, he enjoyed it. Like, he was a little malicious and shit like that.
It seemed real. It seemed very real when he was enjoying it. Yeah, I mean, to put your mind into that place, to allow yourself to go there, you got to get real close to crazy. You got to get right next door neighbors to crazy. You got to see crazy every morning when you're getting in your car. Crazy.
What's the craziest you've seen? Who you worked with that you're like, I've seen someone go to that place? On Red State, we were with Michael Parks. I don't think I've ever seen Michael Parks and Melissa Leo went to weird places, like incredible places where I'm like, oh shit, this is otherworldly stuff. Like true fucking actors, man. True across the board.
Michael Parks is the preacher?
Yeah.
Listen, folks, if you see one movie this year, see Red State. Mm. Kevin invited me to this movie. Now, listen, I had known nothing.
Is it on iTunes?
I knew nothing of what this movie was. I had no idea. And I showed up. I showed up with Aubrey. And we had not a fucking clue in the world as to what this movie was about. I assumed it was a comedy, and I heard some whisper online. I heard it was a horror film, ? That's all I saw. Mm. So I go in with an awesome blank slate. And halfway into the movie, I'm like, what the fuck is going on? I'm like, maybe 35, 45 minutes in, I was like, this is the craziest fucking this is Kevin Smith's movie? It's like you have to throw out everything you think of as a Kevin Smith movie. Kevin Smith movies are always fun comedies, you know, and this movie just gets so fucking crazy so quick and just keeps and goes. And, you know, I appreciate so much about that movie. But what I really the one thing that's staggering right off the bat was that guy who played the preacher, Michael Parks.
Amazing.
If that guy doesn't get nominated for the Academy Award, he
deserves so much attention.
Yeah. Fuck awards, right? Who cares?
But still,
to
a 70-year-old man who this business turned its back on a long time ago and clearly has better chops than most of his peers who went on to other things, it means something.
Yeah.
Like that award, it may not mean shit to me, me getting awards, but him, that award means something. It's still, he comes from an era
Where it does mean something. Well, I wish we could substitute that with the greater opinion of, you know, whatever people, nice people all across the country, people, discerning individuals. If you watch this movie and don't think this guy's a fucking super genius, all that shit that I said about Daniel Day-Lewis, exact same shit I'm saying about this guy.
He's one of those very special talents.
He was playing this fucking preacher, and he had this one long, non-cut monologue. I mean, the camera is on him for a long fucking time, and it's all one run, and it's brilliant.
Thank you.
It's brilliant. He sucks you in to the point where you're shitting your... You know this is going to... Something terrible is going to happen. You don't know when, you don't know what, and it keeps... He just holds you there with this conviction in this character and this character's belief that is fucking scary. It's scary.
There's imminent death.
Yeah.
Like, it's set up right there. But his performance is so riveting. He's so fucking good at the craft that you'll put, because the movie's moving along at a nice clip right there. We put the movie on pause to be like, ladies and gentlemen, Michael Parks. And he does a fucking, essentially a guitar solo. The most amazing guitar solo you've ever heard. And rather than be like, move on, fucking get to the murders that we knew were coming, people like kick back and go like, oh my God, that's so beautiful. And he finishes his solo and the movie begins again. It's
so weird. Sweet.
It's pretty astounding.
A guitar solo. What kind of music?
You saw it. It's him. It's his voice I'm talking about. I'm talking more metaphorical.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Did I lose
you?
So high.
Are you more stoned than me?
I must
How is
be.
That possible?
Because you keep going. You keep going and dragging me in with you. I thought you were
being
literal.
Down the rabbit hole, bitch.
Wow, I'm an idiot.
This ain't even happening. We're in this meditation tank. You're in the meditation tank, and we're just having this conversation.
How did that character come about? For sure. I'll let you know.
How'd the character come about?
How did that guy?
Fred Phelps. I saw a Westboro Baptist Church guy. And that dude created that character for me.
Did that create the movie for you?
Nah, a little bit. I mean, it was kind of a two- or three-prong thing. Like, number one, I saw Parks in From Dusk Till Dawn, which was Quentin's movie with Robert Rodriguez. And he's in the opening 10 minutes. He's astounding. Like, I love acting. Love actors. Love people, actresses. People that could take the words off page and make it sing. But, you know, there's only so many ways to skin a cat. And fucking even the best of them, you pretty much, like, can see the strings and whatnot. You know how acting works. Every once in a while, you meet one of these performers or see a performer. You're lucky you get to meet him. That takes it off the fucking grid, off the charts.
Yeah.
This guy does this in the opening of this movie, which From Dusk Till Dawn is a fun vampire fucking romp. This guy comes in and drops a performance that could have won, should have, in a fair, just world, would have won a supporting Oscar nomination. Like, you know, Judi Dench gets one for Shakespeare in Love, and she's in the movie, what, 7 or 9 minutes? Parks is in From Dusk Till Dawn roughly the same time and gives a performance that's as electric, as believable, as off the charts wonderful, but, you know, it's a genre film, so he don't get the attention and stuff. This guy, fell in love with him. I'm watching From Dusk Till Dawn, 1995, to Lumley Sunset 5. Bob Weinstein's like, you want to get to see the From Dusk Till Dawn Quentin and Rabbits movie? I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, I want to see the vampire movie. And I went to go see this vampire movie made by Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez. But what I left there was with, I have to work with that man. I don't know who that fucking man is, that sheriff guy. In the first 10 minutes, who, spoilers, the movie's fucking 16 years old, but just in case, he gets killed in the first fucking 10 minutes. Whole movie, I'm like, no, that dude was the fucking truth. The absolute truth. I walk out of that theater, I go, I got to work with that guy. To sit at the fucking feet of a Yoda like that, and like for a month on a set, imagine my amount of fucking information you could glean, steal, fucking benefit from.
He's pure genius in acting form, a clear genius. When you're watching him, it's so spectacular and riveting.
He
so
inspired
good.
It. I told him there were days on set, like I did, we didn't do many takes at all because we were just, you know, we didn't have a lot of money and shit. It was a low budget movie. And when the performances are that good, man, you got John Goodman, Melissa Leo, you got Parks, they're crushing it, take one and shit. So, you know, I leave it up to them, and they're like, I'm good, if you're good. I'm like, I don't direct the movie as much as I sit there and edit it in my head on set, because you don't direct Michael Parks. I'm going to go up to him and be like, here's how I do it based on all my experience playing Silent Bob over the years.
Did he ad-lib any of that?
He got in there and definitely...
Because it seemed like he could probably just start talking in that guy. He seems so in tune with that fucking character, man.
Yeah, he was. Well, he had that script for, what, 2-3 months ahead of time. By the time he came to the set, and I'm not the author of that performance. That guy authored his own performance, hands down. They're across the boards. You don't direct a movie like Red State. You just let it happen.
But all that whole...
You make sure you keep it on the tracks. But this dude's, like, his... He had the script for a while. When he came to the set, he is like, can I have the space? Can you show me the space? And we brought him to the chapel and whatnot, and they were still putting the finishing touches on it. But he kind of did a laid out, like the way you would lay out a dance. He essentially kind of didn't say the dialogue out loud, but he would just sit there and you'd watch him kind of moving his arms and stuff. And it looked like he was slowly waltzing by himself. And then he'd stop somewhere and ask somebody to put a mark here, blah, 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 put a mark here. Then he put it all together. I got to see what he was doing the next morning. He had choreographed this fucking thing. Like, he could do it from top to bottom. Like, he could do the entire scene, which was, I think, in the script, 12 pages of dialogue or something ridiculous like that. And he could fucking do it from beginning to end. And you watch him hit his marks. He knew exactly where he wanted to be and stuff. So much so that, like, I had done a draft right before shooting, and I was like, hey, man, this is the new version of the sermon. And he fucking bristled because he was like, no. I mean, that other stuff's great. What do you need this for? Blah, blah, blah. And what I realized was because he was dialed in, like he knew what was going to happen when he hit that stage. He knew where to be so that he could just let his art come out of his mouth. But he was still framing the movie for us, still commanding the stage. It's a movie. Let's keep things moving. He wasn't content to just stand there and deliver dialogue, which he could have, and he still would have fucking captivated you. Instead, he choreographed his movement. It was fantastic. He was a dude that just gave beyond given. I wrote it with him in mind, going, I know what it's going to sound like because I'm a big fan of this dude's work now. And even getting to the set, he would still deliver over what I heard in my head. I'll never forget, what, a month before we start shooting, we're in my kitchen. It's me, John Gordon, who's Bruce through the movie, and Parks. And we're just talking about when we're going to go. And it took us a while to get money together. And so we're leaving the kitchen, and we're talking about something in the script. And he stops, and he goes, he delivers one of the lines, and he delivers it so flawlessly. And it was the first time I heard Parks do what would be Aben Cooper. And so I was like, oh, my God, Parks. My heart skipped a beat and shit. He left, and I turned to John Gordon, and I was like, dude, he's going to win an award. I don't know what it is, but, like, there's no way people don't cite him. It, like, if for that one line he slipped into Aben Cooper, you could hear it. You can, the gravitas of the life that Michael Parks has led, informing, like, every job he did or didn't get, an entire life brought to bear on this. He gave a monster some soul. Like, you look at that character on the page, very two-dimensional, easy to hate. Michael put a soul on him where, you know, you still hate him, but you're like, oh, there's somebody under there. You know, he's not just like a two-dimensional cartoon you could easily write off. He brought something to it. And I wanted him to do two-dimensional cartoon. Like, I was just like, I'm going to put you in track suits because that's what Fred Phelps wears. And, you know, you can talk like him. He goes, I don't want to do that. If you want me to do a Fred Phelps impression, get somebody else. He's going, that man's fucking boring. He's like, I came to act. I was like, right on. And he did charismatic instead.
Wow.
He's a dude, man. He don't fuck around. This is a dude who's a straight shooter. You 70 years old. He's not pulling punches. He's going to tell you exactly how he fucking feels. And he...
What is it? That has to be a little intimidating, though, when you're having that kind of a conversation with him. You wanted him to do that, though, right?
Yeah,
you wanted him to take it and own it.
All exists because of him. And, like, he'll give you... You know, like, I'm a grown-up, so I can take good ideas, leave stuff behind. He gave me the wonderful idea. You've seen the movie. Like, it ends with somebody going, shut the fuck up, from off camera. Without spoilers. That came from Parks. It wasn't in the script. It was just, you know, it just ended where it kind of ended without that. And Parks was like, how about instead you go off of me, and I'm trying to be vague so as not to spoil it, but I hope you remember what I'm talking
about. Yeah, I do, totally.
You go off of me singing, and then you go down to another cell, and there you are, you know, and you say...
You're giving away way too much of your movie right now.
A little bit, but again, I said spoilers, but it's...
Tune out, folks.
Yeah. But anyway, he goes, you say... blah, 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 you say that line. And I was just like, I said, Parks, I would love to, but I think it'd be weird in this moment. I said, I like the idea of that line. I said, but cutting to me in the movie, I'm not in the movie, and I think people would take people out of the movie. And he goes, why? And I was going, because people would recognize me. And he goes, from what? And I realized, like, oh, my God, this guy, like, he has no clue that, like, I've had this whole other career. As far as he knows, like, it's Red State and Red State only. He knows I made some movies, has no idea what they are, didn't know I was in them or anything. That was so sweet. It was going in pure, you know what I'm saying? Like, this dude went in all about the craft, and he dropped science on that performance. And he would sit there from time to time, like, and be like, can I grab one more take? And I'd be like, Parks, you can have as many takes as you want. We're literally all here because of you, because I saw that performance in From Dusk Till Dawn. So it was kind of like the whole movie was kind of a Parks celebration. You know,
right.
People that didn't know him fell in love with him as we made the movie, because the dude just, every day you were awed by something he did. But you were sitting there going, oh, my God, like, do you remember? He started singing in the movie. At one point, we had the whole chapel, you know, everyone in the chapel singing. And I said, for some other part of the movie, I said, hey, man, while this thing's going on over here on camera, I'm going to push in on you. You want to sing one of those, you know, gospel hymnals? Because he picked the other one, Old Rugged Cross. I said, you got another one you want to go with? And he's like, yeah, man, I can sing Farther Along. You want that? And I was like, yeah, whatever, sure, totally. And we shoot him. We're pushing in on him. And he sings Farther Along, and it's kind of as it is in the movie. He's got this beautiful, soulful voice. The man had made records. So, it sweeps me off my feet. And it's a church song, but I'm still way into it. Next day, I come into work. Everyone on set, periodically, you hear him going, like, Father-in-law, and they're all singing it. And I'm like, it's good. I said, right? Like, it's catchy? They're like, yeah, for a Jesus song, it's pretty catchy and stuff. So he brought that to it, too, the elements of singing.
Charisma.
Charisma. And that's what he went for. He said he wanted to play it as a charismatic. He had this whole backstory for, like, you know, his not only Aben Cooper's father, but his grandfather. He's like, oh, he's very close with his grandfather.
He wrote a backstory himself. Absolutely. To create for the character?
Yeah, he told me. He's just like, look, he was tight with his grandfather, and his grandfather was still fire and brimstone. He was charismatic, but he was still strict. But his grandfather still also had a sense of humor for the kids. So his grandfather would be the one in the kitchen, you know, pulling like a train whistle down with one fist and lifting a leg and farting with the other. So he was still kind of human. So he loved his grandfather, wow. Eben Cooper, even though he preached the holy word and he loved him for it. His father also preached the holy word. This killed me because Park's going on all eloquently. He goes, his father also preached the holy word, but he probably touched his dick. So he don't talk about his father ever. I was like, that's astounding, dude. That's amazing. You just
made that up. Bizarre.
But he gave it thought. He gave thought into buying the outfit, dude. He went out and picked out the wardrobe with Beth, the costume wardrobe person, picked every piece. She was just like, never really done that before. Gone out with girls who are looking for specific sizes. But he, right down to the underwear and the socks, the dude had to be involved in picking the choices that what Aben
he felt wore. Represented.
Yeah, and he put the outfit together. I remember the first time she showed me a picture of him in the outfit, Beth shows me pictures of Aben in his outfit, Michael Parks, and I'm going, oh man, that ain't it at all. I was looking for a tracksuit, like this dude wearing some khakis and a button down shirt and a tie, looks like a school teacher. And I had, you know, I'd read State on my brain for like 5 years, you know, wrote it 5 years ago, and I'd always had a very specific idea of what he looked like, which was stolen from the look of Fred Phelps. And I remember going, like, I don't know, man. Like, how do I address this? I don't want him to wear this. And she was like, you might want to go with it. He's dialed into the costume. And it was such a good choice because the clothes made the man. Like, I don't even know how else to say it. It sounds corny. But the outfit made him, just allowed him to do what he had to do up there. He felt like, if you see him early in the movie, at one point he's at the protest holding a cup of coffee outside. He's wearing just a jacket, a windbreaker, and a T-shirt or something. But whenever he spoke the holy word, he would put on what, you know, his Sunday best, essentially. And this was his Sunday best, like the button-down shirt with the tie. And he believed in presenting, particularly if you're going to go up there and preach the holy word, you should look respectable and blah, blah. All this philosophy behind just the outfit. And the whole time, I feared it until we went in front of cameras. And I was like, this looks beautiful. Like, the outfit is perfect in some weird way because it gives him this just air of respectability. And that makes the shit coming out of his mouth that much more heinous. I realize I'm still standing. Sorry.
He was, yeah, he's that guy's a unique talent. It's hard to believe that it's taken him this long for, it's taken me this long to find out who he is. Mm. You know, like, why doesn't America?
Quentin and Robert, Quentin Tarantino particularly.
Made
this
that
is my
guy
charming Quentin
famous?
Story. I love this story because it shows you that we're all like fucking kids in this business. We go see the movie. Quentin's got his own fucking movie theater at his house. Looks like a fucking real movie theater. Movie seats, fucking popcorn and shit. And he's got these awesome sculptures from his movies all around by this artist named Cleet Shields. Great. Own personal movie theater. Sits about 50 or 60 or something like that. Nice. Maybe a little less. So we go watch Red State there. It's me, Quentin, and Parks. Michael Parks. And he liked it. He liked it. So he really loved it. I don't want to oversell it, but he dug the movie so much, he watched it without us when he wasn't supposed to. Like, he got the print 2 days early. We were supposed to watch it with him the day that we joined him. And he was like, I'm going to be honest with you. I watched it already. Twice. Fucking love it. You know, I was like, oh, you don't have to apologize for that. That's fucking awesome and shit. So he watched it with us again. Then afterwards, he goes, come in the house. And, you know, because the theater's separate from the house. And he brings us in the house. And this fucking charmed me. I will never forget this. He goes, I got to show you my tape. I got to show you my Michael Parks tape. And he goes into, you know, he's got a big entertainment center. He's DVDs everywhere and stuff. High tech everywhere, but he also still has VHS. And the dude lays hands on a fucking VHS tape. Almost as if I thought I hit the fucking flux capacitor because I ain't seen one in a while. And there, scribbled on the fucking side in marker, because remember, we used to write on the side of our videotapes when we made our own tapes. The best of Michael Parks. And Quentin throws this tape in. And what it is he's such a fan of this guy's work. He loves him going back to Then Came Bronson. He loves this dude's work so much. Anytime this dude's going to turn up on TV or gets a video of him, he records from tape to tape or from TV to tape the segments of his performance, everything that involves Michael Parks, particularly the highlights and shit. So what you have is a collection of, like, some of the cheesiest exploitation straight-to-TV movies or straight, you know, like, about a high school volleyball team or college volleyball team and stuff like that, murder mysteries and whatnot. Like, real programmers. And as he's showing you the clips, even though it's programmers all around him, Michael Parks is still, in each one of these scenes that Quentin has pulled off and put onto this VHS, dropping science, performance science, where you're just like, this is crazy. Like, this dude's doing Shakespeare in the middle of shit. And yeah, not to put all, you know, anybody who made those movies down or off or whatever, but clearly, like, everyone else is kind of like, you know, here we are collecting a check, and this is about the best, the furthest we can go. And this dude is, like, crushing it, crushing it.
Like, what movies?
A lot of TV movies. I don't even know them, dude. They're all TV movies from, like, the 60s and 70s and a little bit into the 80s. And that's what Quentin had collected. He would, like, this. He's got, you know, encyclopedic knowledge of cinema and even bad trash cinema. But there is no such such thing as trash cinema to this guy. He watched that movie and he found gold, like diamonds in the midst of shit that was just maybe simple or fucking programmer material. And he collected them for years on a fucking VHS tape, long before he ever knew he would be a filmmaker, long wow. before he ever knew he'd meet Michael Parks, let alone become a filmmaker, make movies with Michael Parks in them, direct Michael Parks, and inspire me to make a fucking movie where I put Michael Parks in it. Like, that's what he said to me. He's like, oh my God, he's going, as a Michael Parks fan, I love this. This is the ultimate Michael Parks movie. I was like, right, right. So for me, I loved that. The tape, dude. He still had it. If he had just told us the story of, I used to have this tape, man, where right. I had the best. That would have been cool enough, dude. But he produced it, and we all watched it together. And I sat in a chair off to the side, and him and Parks sat on a couch. And it was there was I would have rolled a tear if it wouldn't have embarrassed them both or made them be like, get out. But there they were, like the man whose work that this kid filmmaker loved so much. Think about the shit you made mixtapes of when you were a kid.
Yeah.
He made him this guy's performance. And there he is watching that very same tape with the guy on the tape, the actor he loves. Oh, it was touching. It was
you know, sweet. That's inspiring, but it's also inspiring that there's guys like Tarantino out there, real yeah. enthusiasts, mm-hmm. you know, dudes who get really fucking super excited about some shit.
But that's like you with fucking MMA or whatever the fuck. Like, the shit that you're into, you're super into. You get geeky about.
Yeah, yeah,
he
definitely
gets geeky
do, yeah.
about fucking movies.
Yeah.
And that passion will yeah. translate to mm-hmm. an audience.
For everything, whatever it is that you're doing, man.
I never wanted to see a fucking UFC?
Yeah.
UFC fight. But when you talked about it on the show, I was just like, when you came on our show, I was like, I would go see this now. Like, when you talk about it with the passion and enthusiasm you do, it translates to somebody who was never sold before, and I wasn't even on the fence, really. But then when I watch you talk about it, I'm like, this motherfucker's smart. Like, he's one of the smartest dudes I ever met.
Everyone running the organization is intelligent. It's a totally different thing than what people expect.
Right.
You hear the term cage fighting, you think, well, there's going to be a bunch of, you know, barbaric assholes and, you know, and mean people beating up other mean people. That's not what it is at all.
Mean people.
What it is people that are trying to attempt to do the most difficult thing in all of sport. Put your body and your health at risk to go after another person's body and shut it down and take it out. It's the craziest game of all time.
Yeah.
But it's the oldest game of all time. Male dominance over other men. And look, we have a society where obviously that's illegal. You can't beat people up. You can't, and it's good. We want everything to be civilized. But in this, the midst of evolution where we find ourselves in this stage along the way from changing from a wild animal to a conscious being, we still got a lot of chimpanzee DNA that needs to be satisfied. And there's one or two ways to do it. Either you can suppress it, you can pretend it doesn't exist, or you can give it something like porn or violence on television and movies and in sports. You could give it something to live vicariously through.
Is that why I like porn?
Yes. Because if you don't have these other ways to live vicariously through, there's only one other way around it. You have to go find whatever it is you're looking for, whether it's find violence or find sex. But if you can get violence and sex in a television form, you can eliminate it from real life. The Japanese have believed this forever. The Japanese believe that, you know, you're much more likely to commit heinous sexual crimes if it's difficult to get laid. You know, I mean, they're so freaky over there, you can buy used women's panties and dispensers.
Dispensers.
That's ridiculous. You put some cash, you buy underwear.
And their porn is, there's no pubic hair.
Yeah.
It's only nipples, and even those are kind of
very strange.
Taken out. But their animation and their comic books...
Tentacles.
Yeah, oh, are yeah. fucking like intense, a lot of bondage, a lot of fucking
giant cocks too.
Yeah,
giant vein laden.
You're not allowed to see hair, pubic hair.
So bizarre.
Very strange.
Yeah, they have. Well, just it's got to be weird when an entire country looks so similar physically. I mean, obviously, you can tell the difference between one Japanese guy to another. I know a lot of Japanese people, but essentially, the vast majority of the people that live in Japan have this one look, dark hair, you know, the Japanese look. I mean, they are a clear race. You know, it's got to be so strange to be a part of such a specific ethnicity. Like, I'm a mutt. You look like you're probably a mutt. You're a mutt. You know, we're a combination. I'm a little bit of Irish, a little bit Italian. But, what, you know, I'm just a white guy, you know, to most people. But when you, you know, Japanese people, like, that is a very clear race. That's got to be very strange to be a part of, like, a real powerful, dominant, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like you look at, like it's very, some Italians you can see this in. You know, you look at them and you go, oh, clearly that guy's some sort of an Italian guy. You know, or if not, he's Armenian or something like that. You know, that sort of dark look. But it could be a bunch of different things. Japanese guys look like Japanese guys. You know, if you understand what like what Asian people look like, you know, Koreans have a different look to them. But it must be interesting to be a part of like one of. I mean, how many millions of Japanese people are there? You know, and to have such a similar look with all these different people like you that you could be recognized immediately somewhere else in the country, you know?
I think it'd be awesome to have a culture. Like, they have a culture. Oh, don't you feel it. Like we, I mean, we have pop culture, which thank God, because that's why I have a job, but they have a culture that goes back eons. And we don't really
and
have
an admirable
that. And as,
one.
As white mutts, we don't really have a culture that goes back eons.
What always impressed me about the Japanese is the culture of discipline. They've had this culture of discipline and of martial arts, and you know, the discipline of war and strategy, like way before any of the European countries ever figured out what the fuck was going on.
Right.
You know, this
like shogun.
This tattoo that I have on my arm is Miyamoto Musashi battling a tiger. This famous samurai guy, and he wrote this book called The Book of Five Rings. It's an amazing book, man, where you got to get into this guy's head that he's living, I believe it was the 15th century. So I think it was like the 1400s. I might be wrong. Whenever he was writing this book, basically, he was a ronin. So he would travel the earth. He had no master. He had no emperor. So he was traveling the earth, basically having fucking sword fights with people. He had like 60 duels, one-on-one duels with other men and killed them in hand-to-hand, one-on-one combat. It's a crazy thought, the thing about killing people with swords. This guy did it to like 60 different guys. Swords, and in some situations he thought swords were too easy, so he would let them use a sword and he would use a stick. I mean, he was fucking, it was a fascinating character. But his whole life was based on balance. It was about art. It was about philosophy. It was about seeking the correct way. And for him, the way of the sword was simply the way to be successful. The most successful movements in any given situation as far as what combat is. But he equated this combat to artistic integrity, the ability to create things freely, the ability to draw and paint, the ability to write poetry and to elegantly express your feelings. To him, it was all connected.
Right.
It was all one piece of excellence, and that is like a guide to live your life by. And he had this statement that I read when I was a kid, and it always stuck with me. Once you understand the way broadly, you can see it in all things. The idea being that once you find out how to tap into anything, like find out how to be a great movie director, find out how to be a great guy who draws animation, a fucking singer, a chess player.
Say it again.
Once you understand the way broadly, you can see it in all things. This is a translation from Japanese, so it's probably not totally accurate. But what that's what he meant is that you find greatness. You find greatness as a carpenter. You find greatness as a samurai. There's that same thing when you just tap into the zone where you're just really tuning into whatever the fuck you're doing, and then you let creativity sort of spread it out for you.
Comes better with age, too, doesn't it? Don't you find the older you get that it's just like comes out of the what?
With awareness, I think.
With awareness? Yeah. Not even just with age?
I think the age is just experience. You know?
Well, and that's awareness?
Yeah.
Or eventually equates to awareness?
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily just age. There's a lot of people that they get older and they put that box closer and closer to their head. You know, they want to see less and less of the world.
Right.
It's all you're seeking as well. You're not trapped in some sort of a box every day. So as you get older, of course you're going to get more tuned into things. You're constantly still asking the questions. You're not trapped in a slave box.
I used to be a destination guy. I talked about it with Mosher on Smodcast quite a bit back in the day. I was destination. He was very journey-oriented. For him, it was all about like, hey, man, everything's a journey. And, you know, it's like the journey is the fucking fun and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, destination, get there. I just want to get to where we're supposed to be. And the last few years I've flipped, and now I am kind of like, the journey is more important to me. And
you know why that is?
Why?
Because you're rich as fuck.
No, we. Dude, I think it's we.
It's that too, but it's also you're successful.
You think
You don't have to worry about it anymore. Yeah, you're fucking Kevin Smith. You got 2 million friends on followers on Twitter. You can talk to them whenever you want to. They want to come and see your movies. You're in this weird zone where you don't have to give a fuck anymore.
Yeah, you know what it is? Somebody beautiful. Put it best, and I love the expression, and I've co-opted it, but they said, he doesn't. Kevin doesn't have to work for anyone anymore because he works for the audience. And I was like, oh, God, that's perfect.
It's true.
That's it. If you could get to that place where it's not about, like, fuck everyone.
No.
But you don't rely on anybody for anything. It's all coming from within you, your camp, or something like that. Not like there's no help. Of course you get help within your world. But do you know how comforting it is to know that I don't have to do